The attack of the killer tomatoes, yes. Or the attack of the red hot chili peppers. Good morning. Let us begin with our Unity's Prayer of Light. And if you would like to, you can think of anybody or anything in your life, situation or person, that you would like to also bring into this scope of conscious lightness. The light of God surrounds us, the love of God enfolds us, the power of God protects us, the presence of God watches over us. Wherever we are, God is. And all is well. In a very brief nutshell, oh yes, sorry, thanks. Yes, it is. Thank you. I have my my roadies here helping me. Pick up the microphone, turn on the recorder. Make sure my fly's closed. Okay. Whatever else might be happening here, okay?
Turn off the hearing aids.
Right, turn off. That as well. I was thinking of kind of a very brief summary of everything that has led up to this point and probably will continue beyond it, is that what we are doing is we are practicing awareness, expanding our awareness, right, so that we have more and more choices of both choosing high frequency decisions or choices, or choosing to transform certain people, places, or things into a higher frequency in terms of our, the way we, the word I use is the way we hold it. How am I holding this? So if I have somebody I dislike in my life, which is perfectly natural, we probably all have some people like that, how am I, when I think about them, how am I holding them? In other words, is my choice inevitable? Like, I can't stand so-and-so, so he's off my list. And that's the way it's always going to be. Or if I can begin to choose to hold this person, knowing even if I don't feel this way, even if I don't want to, holding this person in as much love as I possibly can as a child of God. So what we are doing here is we are expanding our level of choice, and by doing so, to use the words that this book uses an awful lot, we are raising our frequency, and by doing so, we are raising the frequency or vibration of all other beings as well. Nothing is separate. And so, whether we feel this emotionally or not, that's a nice piece. That's sort of an extra attraction that comes along. Occasionally, not all the time. So if you feel good emotionally about it, fine, wonderful. But don't expect the emotions to always be there. Our choices today are not just based on feeling good. They are based on what is good. And that's not always necessarily going to be a feeling. Okay. But if I can stop and take a look at myself and encourage you guys perhaps to do the same thing, of taking a look at where we might have been even a week ago or 2 weeks ago, of saying, you know, my first initial reaction to this person, place, or thing is still the same. I want to punch him in the nose, or I want to feel guilty about it, or I want to feel ashamed about it, or I want to feel whatever it is about it, okay? That's still the same. But as soon as I realize that knee-jerk reaction has taken place, right after that, following on the heels of that knee-jerk reaction, I realize, oh, I could hold this differently. I've got more of a choice here than I did before. There might still be some inertia that I might have to push up against, but the choice there is there, and it's more, it's expanded from what it was or might have been before. It's from a Unity magazine. You are a soul in evolution. not perfected, but perfect in your enfoldment. I really like that. Just as the rose discloses its perfection at every stage of its development, from seed to shoot to stalk to bud to flowering blossom to dormant winter plant, so you are perfect in your every level of expression. You uniquely shine forth the perfection of the whole of you in each step of your soul's evolution. Wouldn't it be nice if we could embrace that? Well, I'm not where I want to be. Too bad. You are where you are. I was also reminded of when the Buddha was ready to choose his successor. He sat in front of all his disciples out there, and he picked up a rose and he just held this rose up. And you could see this look of consternation on all of these monks' faces. Of, what's he doing? What's this all about? What does he want us to do? And there was one fellow by the name of Ananda who just sat there and smiled. And he said, you're the one. Now don't try to understand that. What does that mean? That's what my mind wants to do. But can you understand your truth? Can you embrace yourself where you are today and know that that is the perfect place of your learning? Whatever you are confronted with this morning or today. I sat down for my meditation this morning and I was horribly distracted by, and I could tell what was weighing on my mind. What I'm attached to is another way of putting that. I scraped my car the other day. I've got a guitar that I can't seem to get exactly in tune. And that might be my hearing aids that are vibrating on a different level, okay? But my B string is driving me absolutely crazy, okay? And so that took up about 20 minutes of my half-hour meditation this morning. The other 10 minutes were pulling myself back from various other, and but was, what was really interesting was, you know, I told God I was really sorry about being so distracted, and he said, you know, that doesn't change how much you are loved. It doesn't change anything except where your head was at for 20 minutes. Now you have a choice of punishing yourself for what you think is a lousy meditation, or accepting the fact that there is absolutely nothing that can interfere with my love for you. Now, I will tell you, maybe 6 months or a year ago, I would not have had that awareness. I would have probably turned myself into a punching bag for the rest of the day. Not knowing that I did that, but I would have been, not, you wouldn't have done that, I know, but not knowing that I was doing that, but that's what I would have done. And I would have been wondering, well, how come I'm so exhausted? How come I feel so crappy about myself? It'd be like if you woke up in the morning and an angel came along and said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to take a little recording device and we're going to put it in your head. And this device will automatically turn on whenever you have a negative thought about yourself. And it will record that, okay? And you say, all right. And then you come to the end of your day, it's 9:30 or 10 o'clock or later or earlier, and the angel comes back again and says, okay, pop that out of your head. Now you're going to need to listen to it.
I'll be up all night.
Well, that's what I...
Was it even big enough to record it?
That's what I was going to ask, you know. How long is the recording going to be? Okay, but the point is, okay, and we can joke about that and... funny, but it's serious as well, which is kind of nice, right? The point of it is that we are feeding ourselves those thoughts sometimes inadvertently all day long without even realizing, without even thinking about it. And so no wonder we might feel drained or exhausted or depressed or whatever, you know, at the end of a day. So what we are doing here is, and we're bringing that up to consciousness. We're bringing that up to awareness. It's much more than what the Course in Miracles says, you know, I could see peace instead of this. It's much more than having a little fortune cookie thing you pull out every once in a while. It's saying, I have a choice of the vibrational level of the thoughts that I choose to hold on to. I might not have a choice of the ones that enter into my mind, because anything can happen. It's the wheel of fortune up there, okay? Anything can get spun out here. I'm not at the point in my life where I can take responsibility for that one. But I can be responsible right now for the ones that I feed, the ones that I hold on to. Those are the ones that I begin to realize that I have choices about. I've got choices about this now. It might not change my feelings or my emotions right away. Bless you. And all of us as well. I might not have choices about my feelings or my emotions, but I do have choices about what I do, or those thoughts that I begin to hold on to. Okay, so that's in very brief summary. It sounds overly simplistic, but it's essentially true. It's what Jesus did. It's what all really master teachers did with their students. Was I will increase your level of awareness, so that you will have more and more choices. And as you realize you have more and more choices of raising your vibration, you will become more and more free. Because that's what it's about. Am I free? And when you are free, you are everything else. When you are free, nothing negative sticks. Can't. There are no tar babies, okay? Nothing can stick. It might come by. Like, oh, there goes that. Oh, okay. Bye. On page 311. I am now choosing to allow any energies that are not mine and are not for my highest good to release from me in perfect order. I am word through this intention. Word, I am word. Ah. How simple, how beautiful. That's another awareness we come to. Is this thought, or is this behavior, or is this pattern of thought or pattern of behavior, does it serve me anymore? And if it doesn't, I can let it go. I don't know about you, but I find stuff in there that I invented when I was 5 years old. Does it serve me anymore? It might have served me for a really long time. It might have given me the thought that I'm safe, or I'm protected, or I'm this or I'm that. I look at that again, I say, that no longer serves me. Let me let it go. Let me release it. I'm still taking responsibility for it. I'm saying it's mine. But I no longer need it to be part of my life. And then you will be releasing frequency. But the example was only to show you that as you become attuned to your own energy field, you can begin to learn what does not belong to you. A bunch of, I was going to say 99%, but I will take that back because I don't know what really the percentage is. But so many things that we have learned about ourselves, labels that we have put on ourselves, thought structures, have come from somebody else. Our parents, our church, our schools. It's like, the way Ram Dass put it, he said, as soon as you're born, people start telling you who you are. The difficulty is none of them know who they are. So they're telling you from a false script. So I'm beginning to realize, oh, you know, my father told me I would never succeed in this. And I've held on to that belief for so many, so many years. And it's not mine. It wasn't mine to begin with. I thought it was. about, I'm trying to think of the time frame. Sometimes I say a few years ago, but when you get as old as I am, okay, that could mean 50 years ago, okay? So this was a pretty long time ago. I was just practicing, learning to play the guitar. I was in the 2 or 4 chord stage, which I was in for about 20 years, okay? Kind of most hippies learned about 3 or 4 chords, and I was one of them. Anyway, I wrote a song. I have no idea what it was called, what it was like. And I played it for a friend of mine. And he said, you know, that's pretty good, but it sounds just like blah, 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 blah. And I said, yeah, you're right. So I crumpled it up and threw it away. Never tried to write a song again until 2 years ago. So I took that on as being the truth. The truth was, you are a what I translated in my mind, not what he said, but you're a crappy songwriter, there's nothing original about that, you probably never think of anything original, anything you write is going to sound like somebody else's, yada, 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 right? And I took that on, I made that mine, because I was so used to doing that. I was so used to taking other people's opinion of me and making that into my own. And it took me a really long time. That's just one. I mean, there are thousands of examples of that, okay? But it took me a long time to come to the point of realizing that that's not mine. It never was mine. It was somebody else's. Now, we can go back in our church teaching and our family teaching and look at that and find so many different things like that. Kim?
I just had an example that just came to mind to me recently. Is that as a child, as a youth, I grew up singing in the church choir and got, you know, sang certain parts and thought I was a pretty good singer. And then somewhere in high school, in a girls' choir, was never singled out. The director said, somebody's off key. I assumed it was me. And from then on, I've been afraid to sing because I think I'm off key all the time. So it was like a self-fulfilling prophecy. I learned from somebody who was very confident. And I know now that I was doing well then, and then that one comment that didn't have, he didn't say Kim. I just took that on, and I've owned it now for, since high school.
We're good at doing this. That's what this is saying, okay? We're really, it doesn't get into the negativity part of it, but saying all of us are really good at doing that, okay? It must be me. And taking that on, making it personal, turning it into a personal message, and then owning it as being the truth. So what this is saying here is, but the example is only to show you that you become attuned to your own energy field, you can begin to learn what does not belong to you. Okay? And I will guarantee you, a huge portion of your thoughts and ideas about who you think you are not the truth and don't belong to you and probably never did. Physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. Okay?
So then it's a matter of going back and realizing who started it, who said that to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do this forgiveness thing that you talked about earlier. You know, I mean, a man I was married to for 24 years had so many problems. And it was awful. And I've been condemning him. Even though he's been dead about 5 years. Every now and then, you know, he comes into my head and I think, God, what was I doing with this guy? Well, I know what I was doing with this guy. But anyway, he is one person that really needs a lot of forgiveness from me.
Okay.
You know, and so there you go. I mean, what you got from somebody else, you know, how you interpreted that and how it impacted.
Sometimes it will be that. Sometimes, and I'm not talking about over-analysis here, right? Sometimes it might take that awareness of where this came from, the forgiveness that it's, this is all part of the lesson. I'm not just saying, oh, that's not mine anymore. I mean, that'd be great, okay? But usually there's some work to be done. Sometimes, though, when we realize it's not mine anymore, we've already done a whole bunch of the internal work without even realizing it, right? And as soon as I say it's not mine anymore, it's gone. Now, there are other times when what Doreen is talking about, I realize, you know, I'm kind of put my Sherlock Holmes hat on, you know, and I sort of track this sucker down to wherever it came from. And go, oh, that's where that came from. Sister Mary Louise in the third grade, when she whacked me over the knuckles with a steel ruler, okay, that's where that came from, okay? And I realized, oh, okay, well, there's another piece here, this piece of forgiveness, of release, of letting go, and maybe even this piece of grieving, that no longer serves me, that is no longer a part of me, that never really was the truth, but I thought it was when I was 7 years old. So, I mean, there are different levels of awareness here. There are sometimes when I don't have to track anything down at all. I don't really care where that came from. Because of my awareness or my vibration is where it is right now, I no longer have an attachment to that thing. It's gone. Okay. You know, it's like being short or having gray hair or this or that. You know, something that might have been important to me at some other particular time in my life, right? I realized, oh, you know, there's nothing there anymore. There's no longer, it might take a little bit of an awakening to realize there's no longer any kind of attachment to that. Doesn't matter where it came from, I'm no longer attached to it. Jill?
Very recently, I've been really pondering, who am I? Who am I? And not just saying it, but really pondering that. And I guess, the one thing that I know for sure is that I used to think I knew who I was, but I didn't. And now I know that I don't know.
Okay.
And that's a whole big different thing than just operating thinking I know. I know that I don't know who I am, and it's okay.
In fact, it's perfect.
It is, okay. Absolutely.
Because what you've done here, and what a lot of us have done here is, letting go of my mind attempting to define who I am. So that in some ways my mind will never know. Right? And yet, if you feel your resonance there, there's a part of you beyond words that does know. Right? But I don't even have to touch that one because it's already there. Right? Because my mind wants to analyze that one too, and I go, nope, sorry, that's not your territory. I am going to know that I don't know with my mind, and that's perfectly fine, and I'm going to know that I know, and that's all I need to know. Perfect. So you see there's a number of different levels there with that one, which are really kind of cool. Thank you. Thanks for the question. It's always good questions. You might want to do that just today, every once in a while, and stop and say, you know, thought flashes through your mind that defines who you are at this particular moment. Right? Is that really who I am? Do I need that one? What you'll notice is that no matter what, you'll get sucked into the circumstances you find yourself in. So if you get, you'll get sucked into being somebody waiting online at Kroger's. That's your identity at that moment, okay? And you'll hold on to that without even, now I'm somebody going to my car, now I'm somebody waiting to go home, now I'm somebody cooking dinner. And you know, sometimes we'll go through days like that. And here what we're saying is, just stopping for a minute and saying, is that really who I am? No, that's not who I am. I can turn my light switch on, waiting online in Kroger's, and just say, you know, I love all of you. Word, I am word through all that I see before me. Word, that I am word. I love everything and everyone I see before me. Thank you, God. Wow, what a difference. You know, 2 seconds ago I was someone waiting online. Now I'm the savior of the world. Not in an egotistical way, but in a realistic way, okay? See, my ego says, well, all these people in Kroger's don't know they've been saved, all right, by me. It's really tricky, all right? You know, your ego's funny. You just kind of jump right in there. But the rest of you knows, I'm not going to let that interfere with the light that I'm shining, because I don't have to. When you are imaging someone in a land far away, let me read this sentence over again. As you understand that you are an energy being, you also understand that your experiences do not need to be contained in physical form as you have identified with up until this time. When you are imaging someone in a land far away in consciousness, you are joining them there. You are working interdimensionally to reach them. So it's not just this, you know, Disneyland imagination. When you are praying for somebody, when somebody pops into your mind that you haven't thought of in 50 years and you decide, I think I will hold them in light. I think the reason why they popped into my mind is because they need prayer. I might not ever see them in the physical world again. So I do that. I am present to that individual, and I am present to my truth, I am present to their truth. I am going from one dimension, I am going beyond the dimensions of time and space. And you can do that all the time. It's not science fiction. When authors have moved into the future to summon imagery for their fictions, they have in fact in many cases intruded on the membrane and bypassed it that separates the dimension of time as you articulate them. Which is why an author might predict a science fiction then and one day that becomes true. Jules Verne was a great example of that. Most inventors are like that. Okay. They without probably even thinking about it too much, they project themselves into a future of, let's say I'm Thomas Edison, right? And instead of saying, well, I'm already imagining what a light bulb is going to look like. I'm already imagining homes in this whole nation, right, working off electricity. Now all I need to do is find the means to be able to get there. Years ago when we were doing a lot of what we called healing the inner child work, which by the way hasn't disappeared, we just don't talk about it too much and say, well, I guess everybody's inner child got healed, okay, we can move on. We can move on to something else. But what we were doing without even thinking about it is we were transcending the dimension of time and space. And we were healing an aspect of ourselves that was not physically present or emotionally present, but we were allowing ourselves to do that. Guided imagery does that all the time. That's why we enjoy it so much, okay? It's like taking a trip, right? It's letting go of these restrictions of the physical universe, or that we think the physical universe is putting on us, and realizing that we don't have to stay there, we don't have to be with that all the time. You are always traveling in frequency. We have talked about this already. And today we want to teach you that you are the vehicle of light that can support others in their healing. When one makes a choice in this lifetime to stand in wholeness, one can do this. But you are all being impacted in consciousness in different ways, and manifestations of physical illness come in different forms and for different reasons. When you serve to heal one another, you are choosing to take into account the soul's requirements of another. One cannot assume immediately, and this is for yourself as well as for somebody else, that one's illness or one's disability has not come to teach them a wonderful lesson. And your limited perspective based on what should be can be, in fact, the distortion, whereas the body is moving out of its form and into refined frequency, may be doing exactly what it needs to do. That's a difficult one. We want to heal ourselves or heal somebody else. We want to get rid of all of the symptoms or all of the things that seem to be contributing to their discomfort as well as our discomfort. Okay? well, because you're ill or because you're this or because you're that, I am very uncomfortable, so I want to get rid of your illness. So I'm not uncomfortable anymore. You get that one? Does that ever happen? Happens to me a lot. Used to happen to me a lot when I was working as a therapist. Oh, here's somebody uncomfortable. I need to make them comfortable again because their uncomfortability makes me uncomfortable. But that has nothing to do with what they might be looking for, okay? That has nothing to do with the healing that their soul might be looking for in terms of acceptance or in terms of love or in terms of whatever it might happen to be. It's just another egotistical reflection of my stuff. So you notice how challenging that little paragraph is. You know, it's wonderful to think of ourselves as being a healer, and I will pray for you and I'll hold you in light, and then have this little or big expectation in the back of my mind, and then you will be completely free of your symptoms, or you will be cured, you will be whatever, and then if you follow that a little bit more, you come to the place where, and then I will feel a whole lot better too, because I won't be worried about you anymore. Oops. Now that's a normal, that's a very typical human reaction. I've got it all the time. I'm not saying that's going to disappear, all right? I'm just saying let's be aware of that one. Who am I doing this for? Why am I doing this? Now it doesn't mean that there are going to be times when you're going to have mixed motivation, because you might. Okay? The ego is always going to be there. It's going to interrupt every once in a while. So there certainly might be some mixed motivation involved. But primarily what we're doing is what we've learned in Unity and various other spiritual teachers have taught us, is when we are praying for something, healing or whatever it happens to be, we are praying for that individual or that situation's highest good. So here's what I perceive as the highest good. And so I am praying for that. But what we add to our prayer is, I am praying, God, I am praying for this or something better. Whatever your highest will is in this, not mine. And so that kind of covers all the bases. It lets me know that my ego might be involved in my expectations, which is perfectly natural. But it also begins to let me know that I don't have to stay there. Any questions on that one? I know that can be a little bit tricky.
Jerry.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard the expression, but I've seen it a lot in recovery and heard it expressed. And that is, you're exactly where you're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard that? Or
yes.
Does that mean anything to you? Or? It just
doesn't
ring true with me. I just look at that and I go, no, I don't think so.
I agree.
Can I read this thing on the rose again? You might have missed this. Well, I might have missed it too, okay? That's why I'm reading it again. See, I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. It says, Jerry, you're supposed to read this again. So it had nothing to do with you, Paul. You just reminded me what I need to do for myself, all right? You are a soul in evolution. Not perfected, but perfect in your enfoldment. Just as the rose discloses its perfection at every stage of its development, from seed to shoot to stalk to bud to flowering blossom to dormant winter plant, so you are perfect in your every level of expression. You uniquely shine forth the perfection of the whole of you in each step of your soul's evolution. The tricky thing is, I know most of the time I don't want to be where I'm at, because I think I should be someplace else. And so the tricky piece of it is first of all, I can't be any other place other than where I'm at. Okay? Even though I'd like to be someplace else. Even though I think I ought to be more along the path of my soul's evolution, here I am. What I believe what statements like that are telling us is that we are in the place of perfect learn, whatever it is we have our soul has set this up so that we are in the place of the most perfect learning possible for us at this moment. And that could take all sorts of varied forms. Sometimes it might be as simple as just simply embracing myself where I am. It sucks. I don't like it. I think I should be someplace else. Right? I'm surrounded by brigands. Right? I've done all of this work. Right? I think I should be much more spiritually enlightened than I am. I think that a half hour meditation should really be a half hour meditation instead of thinking about the dents in my car or a B string that isn't working on my guitar. And yet here I am. Embracing myself as best I can where I'm at. Now there's a little bit of a hook there. Well, I'll embrace myself where I am so I can move to the next step. That'll probably be there. I probably won't get rid of that one for a while. Okay. But I do have a choice. Here's where the frequency comes in. I can embrace myself where I am. I can open my heart in love to where I perceive. See, even where I think I am is not where I am. That's just where I perceive myself to be. So that's another lesson. This has nothing to do with where I really am. This has much more to do with where I perceive myself to be. So I will embrace my perception at this moment. Here's my perception of where I am, even though I might not be able to define it. I will open my heart to that love. And as best I can, I will let go of any other attachments I might have. What I am doing is I am simply allowing myself to be in this present moment. And allowing nothing else, or hopefully nothing else to intrude. So in this moment, I am not defining myself as being in any particular place. I am simply saying, I am. Not I'm lost, I'm confused, I'm depressed, I'm not where I'm supposed to be. I am. When I embrace that, maybe just for a split second, I go into that space of I am-ness. And then, of course, I pop out again and say, oh, that's what that was all about. Oh. So here I am again, thinking I should be someplace else. Well, let me embrace that. Let me embrace the next one. Let me embrace the next one. And then, of course, my ego goes, well, how long am I going to have to do this? Let me embrace that. Let me embrace that. Let me embrace that. Jill?
You had, just a few seconds ago, you said that one of the catches for us is that, I'm not where I want to be, but it'll get me someplace else. And yet, that knowing to me is okay. I don't like where I am. I'm sad. Mm-hmm. I'm mad. I'm whatever. But I have faith and trust that this is where I need to be. In fact, to get someplace else where I'm more content.
Thank you. I had a friend of mine years ago. Her name was Molly. And Molly was a dear friend when I was living up in Columbus, Indiana. We've kind of lost touch with one another. But one of the many things that I hold fondly about her was when she would find herself in a difficult situation, either internally or externally, which she was doing all the time, by the way, she would pace up and down in her living room saying out loud, what's the lesson here? What's the lesson? And she would do that until something would show up in her consciousness and say, here's what you're supposed to be learning from that. In other words, she the state of mind she was in, or the state of perception she was in, sucked. She didn't like it. If she could have changed that by snapping her fingers, she probably would have, right? But she knew that whatever this state of consciousness was, or this particular situation that she found herself in, that this was somehow or another related to her soul's choices of putting her in a place where there was something that she needed to do, or needed to learn, or needed to let go of. And so she would stay with that like a bulldog, right? What's the lesson here? What do I need to learn from this? And she would hold on to that until the answer came to that, and then of course she could make a decision. Now you see what's happening here. If I am holding myself in the perception that I'm not where I want to be, take a look at the vibrational level of that. Or if I'm saying to myself, you know, I am in a place where I don't want to be, or I don't like my, at least my perception, but I will embrace that as best I can to allow whatever it is I need to learn, or whatever it is I need to heal, to allow that to come to my consciousness. So just get a sense of the difference in vibration of those two patterns of thought. That's where my choice is. My choice isn't necessarily in feeling better. My choice isn't necessarily in changing my feelings or my emotions, or even necessarily changing my changing my situation. It's changing how I am holding it. I always have that choice. I can hold myself in darkness, or I can hold myself in light. It's never going to be perfect, probably. But I have a choice here. Now, I must admit, for most of us, I'll just say for myself, for oftentimes when I'm looking at myself spiritually, it's, quote, not where I think I want to be or should be. But if I really stop for a minute and examine that, my attachment is much more to my emotions and my feelings than it is to any other kind of spiritual reality. I don't feel good about myself. I feel depressed. I feel angry. I feel unmotivated. I feel whatever, okay? And I'm using my emotion. This is something this is something I have been meant to learn. I'm using my emotional self as a barometer for my spiritual condition. Not the truth. Never was. That's not who I am. But see, that's something I learned. I probably learned that in the womb. How you feel is who you are. Or how you feel is who you are spiritually. It's another famous expression in 12-step recovery programs, which I can't stand. If you feel far away from God, who moved? Did you ever hear that one? What bullshit, okay? For God doesn't move. That's your emotion, that's my feeling. I feel far away from God, but that has nothing to do how much you were loved. You can make it into something like that, but it's not. It has absolutely nothing to do with truth. It has something to do with how you feel. It has something to do with your emotions at that particular moment. But it's absolutely nothing to do with truth. So when I find myself, that's how my emotionality spills over into my spirituality. As I use my emotions or I use my feelings as a barometer for where I am spiritually. And all I'm suggesting right now, I'm not telling you where to go with that because I'm still learning about this one myself, but please don't let that be your truth, because it's not. And maybe the lesson there for each one of us is to see beyond my emotionality to the truth of something that my spirit knows beyond how I feel. Now, the desire to heal someone you love is a noble one. And yes, we will tell you that anything can be healed. Everything has been healed. And the disability that you have is in the awareness of this. Take a couple of lifetimes to absorb that one. Huh? That, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago about how Jesus healed. I don't see you as being diseased or as being ill. I see you as being perfect. And because my vision of you in perfection, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, is so strong and so powerful, it overcomes whatever negativity you are holding on to, whatever thoughts you have of this is what I am, or this is how I am, or this is the way it's always going to be. Now, we are not eschewing medicine, and this is a very important thing to understand. Deepak Chopra, right, who's a great fan of Ayurvedic medicine, right, you know, and different other forms of energy healing, right, said, look, if I get run over by a bus, take me to a Western hospital emergency room. We can do the other stuff later. Interesting. Throughout time, there have been remedies of the earth for illness. And everything that is of the earth is of the Creator. And information about how maladies can be healed with other means than frequency have been gifted to many through inspiration. This is very true, by the way, in the plant world. If you run across a plant that might be harmful in some ways, many times in nature there will be another plant very close by that will heal that. There's a plant called nettle. I don't know whether you're familiar with that or not, but it's got little stingers that come out and, you know, stick you. And usually growing right by a field of nettle is something called soapweed, which you, if you put on a nettle burn, all right, heals it almost immediately. The desire to heal one another from that which ails them is a truthful one and has always been supported. So we did not tell you today to bypass medicine for frequency. Medicine is frequency, in a different form. This pill is a vibration. It's rather solid, just like your body is. But it is also a vibration in form. Is it what you need right now? You might need to decide that yourself. Is that a weakness? I don't want to get into this other paragraph because it might take too much time, so let's just take a minute to close. Just take it in for a minute. Beyond your body, beyond your mind, beyond your emotions. There is an inner self and inner truth that knows. Thank you, God. And maybe we can end the way we began this morning. The light of God surrounds us. The love of God enfolds us. The power of God protects us. And the presence of God watches over us. Wherever we are, God is. You might notice that that means something different than it did 45 minutes ago. Thank you all. Thank you.